and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. Today is April 15th if you're in the United States, and this is Cindy F. Solomon, your host. Delighted to be with you today. The Global Product Management Talk is a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. It's for passionate product professionals, business owners, CEO, founders, product management people. Passionate product people want to teach, learn, and network about what it takes to produce successful products. Very excited to be in the studio today with Dennis Shao, who is the Director of Product Marketing at NXPO. We'll be talking about product marketing and how to market your products today without marketing. How to do product marketing without marketing your products. You can follow us on Twitter at ProDMGMTTALK. If you're tweeting, use the hashtag pound, ProDMGMTTALK, and you are welcome to call in to talk with us on the show. And I'm told that the best experience for listening live is to call in. The number is 323-927-2957, and we will be following your tweets and giving you a shout out. Also, welcome to the Startup Product Talks Meetup community here in San Francisco. And thank you to our sponsors, the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, which provides training, certification credentials, education, and opportunities for individual members to demonstrate their level of product management expertise, and provides corporate members an insurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. Follow them on the web at www.aipmm.com and on Twitter at AIPMM to see they are posting international product management and product marketing position employment opportunities. Check them out. Thank you to our broadcast sponsor at Sprintly. Sprint.ly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprintly. You can find them on the web at Sprint.ly and on Twitter at Sprintly. Sprintly is project management software that brings the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Check it out, Sprint.ly. Thank you to BrainMates.com, boosting people and product performance. Subscribe to their newsletter, read popular brain rants, learn about their consulting and mentoring approach to forward your product management career and methods on Twitter at BrainMates and BrainMates.com. Sponsumo solves the headaches of managing conferences and other events and allows you to focus on relationships and sales. Sign up for a trial account at Sponsumo.com. And thank you to Blame Sally, who the music is courtesy of. www.blamesally.com. They are performing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on May 11th, 2013. Go to www.blamesally.com and get your tickets today. And we're broadcasting live at Studio 132 with BZ Lewis, six-time Emmy winner. Visit them at www.studio132.com. We're in the beautiful Oakland Hills, and in the studio with me today is Dennis Shao. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I'm very excited to talk with you about product marketing because, as I mentioned to you, the product management body of knowledge, the ProdBoc, is in development. It's being driven by the AIPMM and a colleague, Greg Girasi, and they put together 60 consultants or more and training organizations to all hit on what should be the foundation for product management knowledge. And certainly people in San Francisco come to Startup Product Talks Meetup, which, by the way, that's at Startup Product. We're starting to meet more than twice a month because the demand is so great for people interested in what is product management and how do I get into it and how do I do it effectively in a startup. And so I'm very excited to talk to you because people don't understand the distinction of product marketing from product management.
Right.
And depending on who you talk to, you know that in here in the San Francisco Bay Area, at least, most organizations are technology driven. So they were started by engineers. And I was just reading Marty Kagan sees product management as a subset of the product development function. And I kind of see it differently, that product managers or the product management function is involved with the business case for the product before development starts.
Right.
And product marketing, for me, and as I was looking at these seven phases to this product management life cycle that is in this body of knowledge, it kind of parallels the creative process, starting with conceive, to plan, to develop and qualify. And product marketing for me is out there in front,
right,
the expert on the market,
right,
justifying, do we need a new product? What's the competitive space? What's the landscape? What's the potential for success if we go down this road?
Right.
So as a product marketing person, of course, you know, that's my view of the world. So I'm excited to talk with you as director of product marketing at Inexpo. How do you see how do you define what product marketing is?
Sure. Good question. I think, well, first of all, I think if you're inside the space, if you're in the product space, you have some very specific thoughts on what product marketing is, what product management is, and where do you draw the line. I think if you're outside the product space, if you're in finance, if you're in sales, if you're in any other function, you kind of think of product management. When you hear the two terms, product management, product marketing, a lot of people think that they're the same thing. And obviously, those of us that are much closer do know that there's a definite delineation. The way I think of it at a very high level, when I first came into the product space, I actually have a background in IT and software development. So I come from the technical side. But when I first started in the product space, the easiest way for it to be explained to me was the delineation between outbound and inbound, where outbound is what I associate with product marketing. You're very close to the market. You are doing product launches. You're doing product definition. You're ultimately launching products. You're very close to that market, the target customer, the prospect. Product management is what I consider inbound. So it's I think that's a very convenient way for me to think of it, outbound, inbound. Inbound would be product management, where you're closer to, you still need to have a presence in the market, but you're closer to the internal side, the engineering team that's going to build the product. A lot of startups are using agile methodology, so you're heavily involved in Scrum, if you're using Scrum, and you're talking to developers, you're putting together specs, you're doing a lot of the detailed heavy lifting with regard to speccing out and building the product. You're then seeing that product come to life. And then in many organizations, if there are distinct functions, you are then working closely with product marketing to hand over things like features, specs, so that product marketing can launch the product. Now, of course, depending on the size of your organization, the mindset of your organization, that could be embodied by the same person, both the product. And I've worked on some projects where I was both product manager and product marketer. And in some cases, in even small companies at a startup, it's all encompassed perhaps by the technical founder or even the founder or the CEO. So it's pretty fluid, but the easiest way I think of it is outbound product marketing, inbound is product management.
Thank you. Setting some context, but let me back up here and introduce my guest. So today we're talking about how to do product marketing without marketing your product with Dennis Shaw, who's director of product marketing at Inexpo and author of the book, Generate Sales Leads with Virtual Events. So Dennis, at Inexpo, he's responsible for go-to-market strategy and execution and for shaping product and platform evolution via the voice of the customer. He's managed virtual event campaigns for Cisco, HP, Oracle, and Microsoft, among others. He blogs about virtual events at Inexpo, that's INXPO, and on his personal blog, It's All Virtual, which is at http://allvirtual.me. And you can follow him on Twitter at dshao, that is dshiao. So today, Dennis asks, do you know where your customers are? It's 2013. I can tell you one thing, they're more elusive than ever. Before, they don't open your emails. They don't answer your phone calls. They ignore your marketing. They're in complete control, and they'll only engage with you when they're ready. So we're going to talk about how to plan and execute your product marketing for 2013. And also, Dennis has generously offered a copy of his book, Generate Sales Leads with Virtual Events. So definitely participate on Twitter or call into the show to be entered into the drawing to win. And again, to call into the show, call 323-927-2957, and our excellent engineer, BZ Lewis, will screen your calls. Thanks, BZ. So great to have you in the studio. And one more thing, I am using a new tool from Twitter. It's nestivity.com, N-E-S-T-I-V-I-T-Y. So we always like to beta test new tools for enabling Twitter chats. You can follow us at prodmanagementtalk.nestivity.com. That's prodmgmttalk.nestivity.com. And it enables a conversation. You can follow the tweets. So I'm trying it out. I really liked that I was able to put today's event in there. I'm not sure if it puts up another wall for people to participate, because the whole intention here is to break down walls, not only cross-functionally, but cross-physical borders, and bring the conversation outside of product management and outside of internal organizations, so people can appreciate what we're doing and get an education and join the conversation. So, is there anything I left out?
Well, that was an excellent introduction, Cindy. Thanks again for having me. I guess for those of you in the U.S., it's April 15th, so hope your day today is not too taxing.
Very good. Very good. And a shout-out to our tweeters. Thanks, Pin2Cities, for the retweet. Thanks to Alicia, who I met last month at Product Camp Silicon Valley. Hey, Alicia, hope plan on October 12th. We're going to have Product Camps San Francisco. So put that on your calendar. And she's just sending out support. And if you are tweeting, we will give you a shout out. So our first question, our Q1 question, which I will tweet out, is, Dennis, how important is content marketing to product marketing? And I will say I'm very excited about our partners at Scoop It. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they're very involved with the lean content movement, which is how do you basically create content once and get it out across all your different venues? So, and I find that to promote these events, and it's all about content marketing. And even that, I would, for me, it looks to me like that's content marketing is what product marketing, that facet of it has become all right. About.
Yeah, that was, I guess that was going to be part of my answer.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I think content marketing or product marketing is content marketing these days. But first, let me say that I love content marketing and I hate content marketing. Let me explain what I mean by that. I love the concept of content marketing, but in terms of the term content marketing, I feel like that has become this year's hot term. I think it was first being used at the tail end of 2012, and everyone's talking about it these days. They're saying content marketing, content marketing, content marketing, to the point where I think it's gotten a little bit overused. It almost creates the perception to some that it's something new. And in fact, content marketing has been around since even before the web. The concept of content marketing has been around. So I think the term, ultimately you do need a term to describe something. So it's good in that sense, but it's almost like content marketing is like the new big data as far as a concept that has got a lot of validity, but I think the term is just thrown around too much. But so let me just step off let's get back to the core function of content marketing. So it is very important. I would define content marketing as, and I heard a great comment, I think, last week, which is content marketing is best when you take the word marketing out of it. It's really about your content. you're not so much marketing something as you are sharing great knowledge. And I think in your market and as it relates to your product, if you're sharing great information with your target market, then ultimately it's going to pay off to you in the form of marketing and ultimately in the form of awareness and then ultimately sales. So I think content marketing is really about, and product marketing is around, having a smart content strategy and figuring out what your target market needs, what are the pain points that they're facing, and coming up with solutions to them via content, in many different forms of content, in a way that helps them solve their business challenges and in a way that not necessarily involves your product. I think you first need to solve their problem, and ultimately your product will help them solve it, but you need to incorporate your product later on once you've already established credibility and gotten their attention. And I think you do that initially as kind of the whole theme of this program, by doing product marketing without marketing your product. You're marketing your knowledge.
Ah, very good point. So provide value.
Exactly.
Be generous.
Yeah.
Share the wealth of knowledge, and you're associated with your product. So people will associate that generosity and that knowledge with the product without leading with the product.
Exactly.
Which is so don't be that circus that person at the circus who's shouting out, or at the that's the old term, and the reason why marketers have a bad name.
Right. Yeah, I think I heard a stat, and I'm going to misquote the number, I'm sure, but I heard a stat last week that I think it was 70% of a sales cycle is complete. So people have done 70% of the research around a product before they engage with your sales team. That means they are consuming a whole lot of content before they even find you. And once they find you, they're able to research your product, your company, your history, what other customers and users are saying about your company before they even engage with you. So 70% of them, I might be misquoting the number, but it's a substantial percentage of the research process is already complete. So if you're leading with your product, they may, first of all, if they're at a certain stage of the sales cycle, they may tune that out because they're not ready for your product yet. They want to know how to solve a problem that before they talk about, they want to hear about your product. So I think it's very important to do content marketing about the business problem, about the industry, and what solutions are that your industry can provide before you are marketing your product.
So I totally agree. The issue that I find is that when I'm consulting or suggesting to people on how to flip what they think the marketing process is, it's more of a long tail. They want to immediately measure anything that they're going to invest in marketing their product. They want to attach it to an ROI.
Right.
And you can't necessarily, or certainly you can on the web, you can recognize immediately how many hits are you getting to that landing page, how many responses are you getting to your email. But it's not necessarily going to translate directly into sales immediately, depending on what the product is.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think a big trend that I'm seeing, and certainly it might be more applicable to larger organizations, but in terms of the investment in content, some organizations are actually looking, and of course, I'll repeat that you probably need to be a large organization as opposed to a startup to do this, but they're hiring journalists to come in-house as full-time employees to be content marketers, and maybe we should remove the term marketer, but to generate content. And the content is not about your product or anything to do with your services or even your organization. The content is about the industry that you're, or the ecosystem, to use another overused buzzword,
right.
That you're a part of.
I love you too.
And there's actually David Meerman Scott is a prominent blogger and author. And I just noticed over the weekend on his blog, I think it's Web Inc. Now, webinknow.com, he posted an in-depth piece on how Raytheon, very large organization, is using an entire staff of journalists to create a newsroom to generate content that is now actually a primary media source in their industry that other websites and publications and, of course, blogs are then covering. So they're like now the primary news source. They're not writing or producing content on anything specific to Raytheon. It's more about the industry. So check out that piece. Maybe we'll post it in the notes. But it's a very interesting and relevant trend as far as what organizations are doing to produce content.
Right. So they're hiring expert bloggers or people who know how to write,
yes,
know how to develop content, even
right.
know how to source content
right.
Beyond the product. Not,
right.
They're not even writing about the product.
That's exactly right. And it's actually interesting. It's not so much they are hiring bloggers, but a lot of organizations are literally hiring journalists. So Raytheon, I think it was from Associated Press. These are folks that are their career has been defined around generating content for an audience, and they're the best of the best. If you're at Associated Press, and they're being hired now, it's a big trend actually. Of corporations now hiring journalists in-house.
Excellent. So I have to tweet this out that there's hope for English majors.
There is hope for English majors.
Corporations hiring journalists in-house. Okay. So I always appreciate having someone who is a big tweeter on the show. But as you can see, it's very hard. We're sitting here facing each other, both with our laptops, following the tweets, and it's very difficult to tweet and talk. But this is very exciting. And David Meerman Scott is someone who was early in blogging about product management and product
yes.
marketing issues, because I know that years ago he did webinars for the AIPMM and
okay.
generated content. And I'm really delighted that AIPMM is one of our big sponsors, because they were way out in front of what product management needs and what the distinctions are with product marketing. So I definitely
right.
appreciate that. So our second question, our Q2, and by the way, if you are tweeting, you can use the hashtag #PoundMGMTTALK and search for that, and you'll see the tweets. And I do put together a transcript following the event that I post on our website and on our one-page collection of content. So I'm always trying new tools for content development, for packaging content, and for automating the process. So our Q2 is, Dennis, what's more important, the company website or social media channels? And it's even more so in terms of where should the company, if they have limited funds, where should they put them?
This is a good question. And I think if you plot the importance as far as your main website versus your social channels, it would look a little bit like an EKG. It would be up and down, up and down. So it's certainly something that you have to manage in order to figure out where to put your resources. So I think of an example maybe 3-4 years ago, maybe less, when Facebook first started becoming prominent and a lot of brands were building Facebook pages. I think the graph at that time would have been very high in terms of social channels. I remember hearing from some very large brands, more B2C brands, that Facebook was their new webpage. So they were putting all of their investment into building that that fan count on their Facebook page, and they were putting their belief was, instead of visiting my homepage, maybe it's Coca-Cola.com, just to use an example, they wanted you to visit the Coca-Cola Facebook page and engage with them there. They were finding a lot more engagement, actually, with their fans on Facebook than they were from a website, which makes sense. But I think it ebbs and flows. I think now Facebook recently was in the news a lot with the fact that there were some algorithm changes. Those of you who are familiar with EdgeRank on Facebook, you now have some brands that are needing to pay. They need to pay Facebook for promoted posts to reach their own fans on their own page. So it's been a little bit controversial, but all that shows is that if you put investment all in Facebook and they made a change, you're really you're dependent on the Facebook ecosystem. So maybe you spent less on SEO and SEM for your own website. Maybe now you have to go back and invest there. Even on that front, you have Google, the most prominent search engine, Google. You've got animals like Penguin and Panda that are making algorithm updates to the way they handle search and content. So maybe now it's no longer about inbound links to your website. Google's now very interested in quality content. So they want you to have high quality content on your site. Maybe that today is more important than the number of inbound links. So it's a very fluid, environment. I guess I don't have a simple answer for you, but I guess be wise. I think you do need to put a lot of investment in your website. That's the main place that people will go to find your product. So you do need to invest in SEO, SEM, but at the same time, you need to be active on social, or you ought to be, depending on your market. And I think, Cindy, you were saying if you had to put your investment in one place, I think if you're a startup and you're small, you've got limited funds, get the website done first, get it done well, get some quality content, at least have some information for somebody that's researching you to have to be able to satisfy their answers there. And then maybe if you can only invest in one social network, depending on your market, I would look to Twitter or Facebook.
So I always like to explain what the acronyms are. So you mentioned SEO and SEM. Could you just give us a brief definition?
Sure. So SEO is search engine optimization, and SEM is search engine marketing. If you think about a typical search engine results page, the SEO are the main center portion of the page. Those are what's called organic links. Those are actual content that has not been paid for, but that the search engine feels is worthy to match your search query. So that's SEO. SEM, search engine marketing, you think of it as paid search. So on a search engine, it's typically those text ads that you see across the top horizontally and down the right side of the page. Those are ads that advertisers are paying for to advertise their content or their product to match the search query that you entered.
So those are the paid keywords.
Exactly.
Cool. Wow. Yeah, so what is driving traffic is constantly changing.
Exactly.
And as new tools come out, as new devices come out,
right.
I won't mention Facebook Home, which is not a new device, but certainly a new entry in wanting to own the attention space, I'd say. But on a side note, I just have to say that Facebook Home is a generational thing.
Yes.
So my kids do not use their telephone to make calls.
Right.
They use their telephone to text message, or they use Facebook to contact their friends.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, just pick up the phone and see where they are. No,
right.
No, they'll respond on Facebook. So that's who Facebook Home is for.
Yes.
I think it's brilliant and maybe a little ahead, but I'm sure we will find out shortly enough.
Right.
But my point is that where the attention goes is fickle.
Right.
You definitely can segment the market based on what their venues are for where they're getting their information and how they're interacting. But the main point is you should own your content. You should own the venue where your content lives. That should be the source. You should be nurturing your own garden, whether it's through launch pages or whether that's the ultimate. So I see content as the product.
Yes, content is certainly the product. And I think it's tricky as far as ownership. I think there are varying degrees of ownership. Obviously, your website, you would think, is 100% ownership. But at the same time, your website is probably dependent upon, let's say, 50%, or in some organizations it's less, in some it's more. 50% of your traffic is dependent upon search engines for visitors to find your website. So you own the domain, you own the content you put on there, but do you really own 100% of it? If your traffic is dependent on search engines, there are other entities that your website is dependent on. And just like Blog Talk Radio, the program that we're on, you don't fully own that service, but you may own a channel on it. So there's cases where, and there's other community systems where the community is provided by an organization, but you happen to have a presence on there. So there's varying degrees of ownership. I think organizations should realize that you ultimately own your content. Hopefully you own your content. I hope you're not using others' content, that is. But in terms of ownership of online properties, I think there needs to be an acknowledgement that you don't own everything.
Exactly. So thank you, by the way, for reminding me we're at the half-hour mark, and you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. We are a top 10 business podcast in the Blog Talk Radio Network, and you can find our archives of over 80 podcasts at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. We are also on iTunes. We are also in the Google Play Store. Search for PRODMGMTTALK for the Android app, where you can get the weekly podcast, listen to archives, also see the weekly news and updates. And it is true. I use the Blog Talk Radio because they're my marketing vehicle. They certainly got the podcast out there beyond the product management community and took it global. And I did do a lot of research to different podcast channels. They made it easy for me to focus on getting great speakers and identifying great content, and they do the push and the outreach for me. So however, I do own the specific MP3s. You know, I do own the sound content. And I know it's sitting on BZ Lewis's computer as well. So, but very important to know, should Blog Talk Radio go down, this is why we continue the Twitter chat. We could still continue this event on Twitter, but if Twitter goes down, we're still having a conversation that we could post after the fact. But it is true about where do you put your basket, where do you put your content, and maintaining ownership of it, and I would say in mirroring that content, so it's available in many different places for whatever is convenient for your market, so to enable people to access it however they want. So shout out to Luke the Coleman, who's retweeted the question about what's more important, company website or social media. Shout out to Ventive and Lydia, who says, in their opinion, you'll always win by investing in quality content. Be smart about using social media to promote new content. People will find you. Thanks for that, Ventive.
Totally agree.
Great. So let's move on to our Q3. What's the best content format to use? So video is something that's much more easier to produce these days and easier to upload. Although I will say that I find that doing video still requires technical knowledge and, you know, people who know what they're doing.
Right.
So the question is, what's the best content format to use? Is it video?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think with regard to video, I remember trying to do video for the technology market 3-4 years ago, and I would agree with Cindy's last statement. It was very difficult. There's a lot of logistics. You needed certain software. You needed expertise. And I think it's much, much easier today. Cindy and I were talking off air before the show about Vine, which is a popular app that's made by Twitter. Acquired by Twitter, where it allows you to capture, I forgot how many seconds, is it 10 seconds of video?
Six
seconds?
Yeah, not a lot.
Yeah. So something as simple as turning on your iPhone and capturing video and sharing it is probably, and we also had the flip camera a couple years back. It's as easy as ever to capture video, even of a pretty high quality, and share it. But back to the question, I've got a simple one-word answer for what's the best content format to use. You ready for the answer?
Yes.
The answer is yes. what I mean by that is all different types of content should be used. I personally have a preference for text-based content, believe it or not. I guess I'm old-fashioned. I actually don't like to sit through a video. I like to get your thoughts or your information via a few paragraphs of text and read it. That's the easiest way I process information. But marketers, especially product marketers, need to acknowledge that their audience has varied preferences. Everybody has their own preference. Some people might want that video. Some people might want the text like myself. Others might want a podcast like this one. They might want to download it to their device, take it on the run, take it on the commute. Others might want a PDF. They might prefer white papers. So because everyone has different preferences, you need to first, I guess this goes back to the great tweet from Ventiv, you need to invest in quality content. So make sure you're putting together content that meets the needs of your target audience, your target customer. Make sure you put that great content together. And then once you do that, slice it and dice it in every which way. So create a white paper, create blog postings, create short videos, do a PowerPoint, do a webinar. There are probably 20 or more different media variations or formats. Based on the investment you have or the team that you have, I know time is a precious resource, but do as much as you can as far as different formats, because there's always there's always somebody that's got a particular preference, like I stated with text, and if you're not putting your content in that format, you might be missing out on an opportunity.
Excellent. And so Ventiv also says that they have to say that judicious use of others' attributed content, adding your own thoughts, is a very powerful way to attract traffic. And as I mentioned earlier, Scoop.it is a tool for doing that. They let you take a blog posting, add your point of view, and repost it, but maintaining the attribute so that people see your thoughts and they can re-scoop your thoughts, add theirs. So it creates a conversation around the original content. And I totally agree that the global product management talk has been a experiment in iterating on this point exactly. What is the content that is important for this particular group of professionals that don't have a trade organization or main place to go, but are dispersed all over the world and also dispersed on all different platforms? And so it started as a Twitter chat, and then I realized I maintain the Twitter chat aspect because that's almost like crowdsourcing the conversation. There's a text-based content, and we add the podcast, and people have suggested to me that I should put the podcast on YouTube also. And I'm like, why? There's no visual. I guess we could add the visual. I'm shy about doing that, but I'm coming around. But people tell me that they'll listen to webinars, even though there is a visual component. And certainly we could add a visual to this with slides or pictures of some of the products we're talking about. But again, that requires additional work, additional attention to adding content to repackage the content.
Right. And I back to the tweet from Ventiv, judicious use of others' attributed content. Totally agree. I think that gets back to where we led off this program about product marketing without marketing your product. When you're on social media, I'll just use Twitter as an example, you should be curated. Your job is, in addition to a tweeting on behalf of your organization, your job is very much a curator or an editor in the sense that you want to see what the market's talking about and identify who are the thought leaders in your market. Hopefully you're one of them, but you're not the only one. You want to be able to find all the great things that are being shared because your target market wants to hear from those thought leaders, and they may not have heard from them directly. So you can provide a lot of value by curating what others are tweeting and sharing and blogging about and sharing it yourself. You can retweet them. You can tweet their links to their articles and attribute them on Twitter. I think attribution is very important to give a shout out to who the author was of a piece of content. As a side note, if you're giving a shout out to a thought leader in your market and you're mentioning them in the tweet, they may start to follow you. So in addition to having a following of your target market, you may attract the attention of thought leaders, experts, analysts, and the like. So yes, I totally agree, adding your own thoughts. So curating and adding your own thoughts, that's a two-step process, can be a very powerful way to attract attention.
Excellent. Excellent. So our Q4 is taking a deeper slice. How exactly should social media be used in the process of product marketing?
This is a good one. I just finished talking about how you can use social media to share information in your market. And that's certainly a primary use case of social media for product marketing. But I like to think of a completely different or maybe opposite use case, and that is using social media as a listening tool. And I think you might have been part of this book, Cindy. There's the book 42 Rules of Product Marketing. I actually wrote a chapter which was about using social media to listen. So this has nothing to do with tweeting. It has nothing to do with posting to your Facebook page. It's all about a one-way experience, which is using social media to tune in to all of the great insight that the market's sharing. So it could be insight on what is their business problems, which your product or maybe a future product of yours can address. It may be social media chatter about your product. So people are not shy. Certainly in B2C, it happens all the time. You can tune in to what's being talked about your product online. And that's gold. That is information that you as the product marketer need to be in tune with, because part of your job is being in tune with the market. So using social media to say, what are they tweeting about your product? Do they like it? Do they hate it? Either one is important in that you need to know what the market's feeling, and you need to aggregate or coalesce or basically build that all together into a picture for your internal teams, for executive management, for product management, for the engineering team. And you need to use that insight that you glean on social media channels to then help guide your own product strategy. So if you are a product marketer who helps to facilitate and plan your roadmap with your product managers, you need to figure out what is being talked about your product specifically and your market in general, and be able to translate that into the right strategy for your product line. So I think there's definitely use cases of social media to be a publisher, but there's an equal and probably more untapped opportunity to use it as a listening device, a listening tool.
Excellent. And thanks for that reference. I did write chapter 13 in 42 what? Rules of Product Marketing, which was, the title was Emulate Twitter, how product managers should emulate Twitter to be cross-platform, to be open, to be scalable. So I used it as a...
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
As an analogy. Thank you. Right. That was the word. So Alicia asks, how do you find thought leaders? And gosh, yep. I think I could give an hour discussion.
Right.
But how do you answer that, Dennis?
Yeah, so it depends on your market. Certain markets have more visible experts than others. But I think in general, thought leaders shouldn't be too hard to find if you are tapped into the places where your target audience convenes or assembles. So Twitter might be one example. There are some markets where Twitter is not heavily used, but I'm seeing it used more and more often. Maybe just do a Google search of a key industry term. So if you're a hardware manufacturer and you've got a pretty sophisticated technology that your product uses, just start to do some searches, set up Google alerts, and those searches will tend to surface people who are writing and talking about that particular technical spec or that particular product. So search engines are certainly one way to find them. Your industry events, go to, if you're not already exhibiting at your industry events, you should certainly go as an attendee. And the thought leaders are often the ones that are on stage, but at the same time, I think the competency level is very much leveling, and by that I mean that the experts on the stage are now, I don't want to say competing, but audience members are now as expert on their market, some of them, as the expert that's on the stage, and they'll often be tweeting their thoughts from the show floor. So in addition to the folks on stage, those are pretty obvious thought leaders in your market. There are a lot of folks on Twitter or whatever social network the event is using. You should follow them as well. They have a lot of interesting insights. And a lot of times the experts on stage will even attribute them or take a question from folks that are asking the question from the audience. What else? Other publications. I think just look everywhere. Look as far and wide as you can in your market. And it should be the case that thought leaders will become quite readily apparent.
Yes, and I would add to that SlideShare.
Yep,
so people who want to establish themselves as thought leaders, there's a specific path to becoming a speaker, to be invited to speak. So SlideShare, YouTube, LinkedIn, Quora, definitely setting up alerts, and Twitter. I have found that's how this all started, that I found that there were people tweeting about product management, but there weren't conversations deep enough happening. Certainly thought leaders are blogging, they're speaking, and you're right, it's become competitive. Conferences, meetups also, see who's speaking at meetups, which meetups are big in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm not sure if they're that big. They're very competitive here. So great question, Alicia. Thank you.
Oh, Cindy, can I just add one more thing I just
Please.
Thought of? Another great tactic that that I've had some success with is go talk to your customers. So you've got customers that are using your product, those that are willing to spend some time to talk with you, ask them what are their primary sources for X. So X might be your market. Ask them what are the websites that they frequent the most, what maybe who do they follow on Twitter, what blogs do they read, what conferences do they go to. Hopefully, the ones that they tell you you've already heard about, but if not, that just gives you the source of new people to follow and maybe start relationships with. Because I think based on your role as a product marketer, part of your function or part of your responsibility may be to establish those relationships with experts who might speak on your webinar, to establish relationships with analysts who might be covering your product in their research. Excuse me. So, yeah, I think make sure you talk to your customers. The more you talk to your customers as a product marketer, I would say the more you talk to your customers as any function of your organization, the better you may be at your job.
Ah, wow. Excellent. The more you talk to customers,
yes.
And you're saying in any function, not just
yeah.
in product management?
I think whether you're finance, whether you're obviously sales, whether you're engineering, I think there's often in many organizations a lost opportunity to engage the target customer or the actual customer with the engineers or the developers who are writing the code. Sometimes there's that disconnect because you have layers in between them. You have the product manager, you have the product marketer, you have the salesperson. A lot of times an engineer will get a request for a feature and his or her response might be, the market doesn't need that. But how do you know that if you're not that close to the market?
So that's a whole other side conversation
yes.
of if we want engineers talking to customers. But again, it depends on the size of the organization
right.
and it depends on the type of product.
Right.
And one of the tenets that I'm seeing, what I'm calling how to create a culture for product excellence, is to have the product people, the product manager, product marketer, talk to everyone inside the organization to understand what their pain points are, what their
right.
perspective is, and also how they view the product, because
right.
they don't have a holistic view of the product. They have their slice of what their KPIs are.
Right. Yeah, that's a great idea.
So Ventiv is hey, Ventiv, if you want to sponsor the show, we'll let you pitch. So, okay, Q5. How many full-time employees should handle product marketing in any organization, let's
right.
say? So that's a question of leisurely, who has resources
right.
to have as many as you actually need?
Right. Well, I'm obviously a little bit biased because I am a product marketer, but I do believe in the importance of product marketing. Of course, it depends on your organization. In some startups, you might not need the role of product marketing. I guess one service I might think of is Dropbox. Dropbox, if you go to their homepage, it's a very simple page. It basically says, do you want to sign up? In that case, Dropbox is using the product to market itself, and that's something I wrote about in the related blog post. Sometimes you don't need a person as a product marketer if your product is good enough and if it's sold in the right framework, such as a freemium offering or a freemium meaning it's paid free to use, but you can pay up for certain features. In some cases, an organization has that specific strategy where they have a product. It's often a cloud-based product that you can sign up for. The product markets itself, as well as different sharing incentives. I think Dropbox will give you more storage if you get 5 or more friends or some number of friends of yours to sign up. So that's a way where product marketing is built into the product and not necessarily encapsulated in a human being. But general answer is, Dropbox aside might be a particular unique example. In many organizations, you need a greater than 0, but maybe less than 1 full-time equivalent, because product marketing is very important in terms of gets back to that content, putting the content together for prospective customers to find. Product marketers are very much responsible for assembling that content, as well as helping to put together the strategy itself on where the product should head, working with product management, if that's not yourself already. So I think definitely between 0 and 1 in large organizations, it's definitely going to be greater than 1 full-time equivalent.
So thanks. So I just want to take issue with, you said that, hey, you can use a product to sell itself. Certainly you should. But who came up with that strategy? who set up that content to position
the
product
exactly
to market itself?
Yes.
Who developed that content thinking of how to design that landing page to do that?
That's right.
You'd hope it was a product marketing person, or certainly it's someone within the organization or consulting agency that was thinking from a product marketing perspective.
That's right. That's a good point. It's a good point. I guess maybe to clarify my answer, it is the ongoing promotion and marketing of your product that in some cases, like Dropbox, the product markets itself. But yes, a product person needed to come up with that savvy strategy to have the product market itself.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, always defending the the product management and product marketing professionals and educating about the need for that level of expertise. So moving along, as we're coming close to the end, we're not going to get through all 10 questions, and they're all very good questions, but let's push on to Q6, which is, what free online community tools can I use for product marketing without marketing the product?
Very good question. Actually, this question, Cindy, might be something that's up your alley. I know you started the show off talking about Twitter and Nestivity. I'll give a short answer. Maybe you can chime in as well, because I think you've done a fabulous job building an online community of product marketers and product managers, starting from zero and building up to where we are today. So I think kudos to you on that. I think free tools, there's certainly the ones that you mentioned, Twitter. LinkedIn has a groups feature. LinkedIn also has a company page that you can use to start building a following. And that use of that is free, both groups and the LinkedIn company page. Facebook, you can build a fan page for your organization. You can build a community within Facebook. Obviously, there's Twitter. There's tools like Nestivity that sit on top of Twitter. There's others as well, other tools that sit on top of Twitter. Google Plus is a social network that is interesting to watch. And I believe it was early this year, they rolled out a feature called, I believe it's called Google Plus Community Pages. That's a free offering that you can use. I know there's been some communities I've used in the past. I'm not sure what they've been up to lately, but there's a service called Ning that you can use to set up a free online community. So maybe I'll just hand it over to you, Cindy.
So funny that you mentioned Ning. Ning is actually old.
Yes.
It used to be free.
Okay.
I think it was started or purchased by Mozilla and now it's no longer free. I actually believe that it's a corporate, used by corporate to do community or membership groups, because it forces you to join. So I would add to free tools to plan events, virtual events. I mean, Twitter chats are virtual events, but if you frame them as with a time constraint and encourage people to show up on that platform at the same time, I would add Quora as a free tool to post content, to answer questions, to create community. and meetups, you know, to drive in-person community, but now I see meetups also being used to post virtual events, anything that has a specific starting time. And then there's webinars, which depending on the which tool you're using could be free or cost money. Right. But Google Hangouts, that is definitely free. The thing with all the free tools is that you can't just throw content there. You actually have to have be strategic about it. You have to really plan that content, how you're posting it, and nurture the community that that shows up around it. It would be so much easier if we could just, you know, throw the content out, which sometimes they do the planting the flag strategy, just throw it out in as many places. Oh, and a secret tool that I don't share a lot is press releases. I put out a weekly press release on these talks, and that generates a lot of organic SEO, and it's a long tail thing over time, but you never know who's going to pick up on that press release, and then I repost it in different places. So there are a lot of online tools, and we assumed we're only talking about online, but
right.
Don't get me started. If you want to talk about before I started creating online communities, I was creating offline communities. A lot more legwork literally involved in that.
Both legs.
Right. So let's see. We are coming down to the end of the hour. There are four more questions. Why don't I thank the sponsors, and then I'll let you give some summing up. Again, thank you to the AIPMM for sponsoring the weekly Global Product Management Talk. Check them out at www.aipmm.com. I am no longer moderating their Friday webinar series, but it does continue with Hector Castillo, who will be moderating going forward. Join us this Wednesday in San Mateo for Startup Product Talks Meetup. We're meeting at Marketo. By the way, Marketo is hiring their marketing automation. And we're talking about growth hacking. How do you get to your first 1,000 customers? And this is for those bootstrappers that want to get 1,000 paying customers. That's what the key difference is. It's easy to get beyond 1,000, but how do you get the first 1,000 paying customers? Join us in Marketo. Go to meetup.com/startup-product-talks to get more information. Thanks to at Sprintly. Find them on the web at sprint.ly. Excellent product management tool. Thank you, Sponsumo, for managing your events, both online and offline, and for also managing your thought leaders at sponsumo.com. And BrainMates, our colleagues in Australia, who, by the way, Nick Koster will be on the show. He is a co-founder of BrainMates next week. So I believe we are switching the time. We will be broadcasting live at 3 o'clock our time, because it'll be 8 a.m. on Tuesday in Australia. So we want to make sure Nick is awake for that conversation, that we'll be talking about the gap between the business case and Agile and how to close that gap. So thanks again to Studio 132 and Blame Sally for the music, which will take us out. But before that, thank you, Dennis, for coming into the studio. And do you have any closing remarks?
I'll be quick. I think the closing remark, as it ties to the title of today's program, as product marketers look to do product marketing, always keep in mind to ultimately you will be marketing your product. And in some cases, when you do a product sheet, you're specifically or explicitly marketing your product. But try as much as you can not to market your product and to market your knowledge. You can check me out on Twitter at dshow. And if you're interested in webinars or online events, you can check out my company, Inexpo, inexpo.com. Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Thanks, Dennis. And look forward to having you speak in person at a upcoming startup product meetup.
Sounds good.
As well as at Product Camp in October 12th. 2013 seems a long way off, but since it's a community-driven event, we have to keep getting the word out there. Thank you to our tweeters. Thank you to our listeners. join us again next week and follow us. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, there is a place where you can click on reminders and you can tell it how you want to be reminded of upcoming shows. And so it will tell you the exact time when to tune in. Thanks for everyone. This is Cindy F. Solomon signing off. Have a great week and see you online. The Twitter transcript will be available. Search for Palm Piro DMGMTTALK and get your taxes done if you haven't yet, and have a great week.